This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the same.
Ask a scientist to design a better violin and you get a dirty look. While the instrument seems simple, the science behind it is not. Such is bicycle stability. The machine appears uncomplicated, but the theories governing its motion are nightmarish. Some things just can't be easily defined by physics and mathematics. The interaction of the body, mind, muscles, terrain, gravity, air, and bicycle are so complex that they defy exact mathematical solutions. The feel, the handling of a bike borders on art. Like a violin, it is largely designed by tough inspiration and experimentation. That's from Chester Kyle.
Push on a pedal, push on a pedal, get your heart started. Push on a pedal, push it down and up again. Push on a pedal, push on a pedal, get your heart started. Push on a pedal, push it down and up again. Get on your bike, sit on the seat, push your feet on the pedal, and ride it all around, ride it all around. Get on your bike, sit on the seat, put your feet on the pedal, and ride it all around, ride it all around.
Yeah, get that car out of my way. I want to ride my bike today. You're listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show here on Radical Radio, 3CR. Podcasting, streaming, or listening on that old AWA wireless in the kitchen. I've got a bit of a show coming up today. I must admit I'm waiting for the guest to walk through the door. Somehow he's got a little bit lost. But look, I'll just soldier on for a little bit and hopefully Nick will show up in a minute. We've got a bit of a show up. We'll talk about a little bit of news. I'm going to do a little bit of a bike book review and carry on with a few other things. So just as a kickoff, I think we've all been pleasantly surprised over the last couple of weeks because we've got a few things as far as bicycle infrastructure in Melbourne that we've been waiting for a long time. And suddenly they've appeared. First off, the fixing up of the ramp and the getting rid of the stairs on the Gibb Street Bridge has been, I was saying to somebody the other day, I think I can remember Peter Moore from Haverford Cycles being part of this, and this is pre the year 2000. This has long been a bugbear of a lot of cyclists in Melbourne, and at last it has been fixed up, which is great. Now, the other thing, and I've got to admit, I haven't ridden either of these two routes yet. I'm just waiting for it to settle down a little bit. The fixing up or making Footscray Road much more safer has been a big thing. And it's, I mean, there are a lot of people who have got different views on this. I've spoken to a couple of people who find it a little bit claustrophobic, the Footscray Road. But I'm thinking there are probably four deaths out of the last 5 or 6 years along that road. So that has been fixed up, which is a great boon. Anybody from the West, and I'm sure Bike West over there have been particularly strong on this. So they're two good things that actually, I know it's taken a long time, but they are actually here and they're important parts of bicycle infrastructure. Now, I might just drift into a little bit of music here, just so that I can check to see whether my guest is going to show up. So this is this perfect day. Oh, I think I'll move on to something else. And as luck would have it, in through the door walks Melbourne Bug and a couple of puppy dogs. That's all right, though. Always better than never, you know that.
Water for you.
Nah, that'd be good. Talk about live radio. This doesn't happen very often where you're waiting for the shepherd to come in with his working dogs.
Extra dog,
yeah, yeah. No, that's all good. Don't I need to apologise, Nick. It's what community radio is all about. Built on the back of passion, foresight and planning. Real people. Nice for that. I've just kicked off the show a little bit, Nick, but that's all right. When you settled, I'll wrap on a little bit, actually, and I'll go with a bike moment so that you can relax, have a drink, settle those puppies down and relax. One of my favourite bike sayings is there is beauty in silence and silence in beauty, and you should find both in a bicycle. Now, to any bike rider out there or part-time tinkerer or gifted amateur or somebody who just loves playing with their bike, the idea that a bike makes a noise when you ride it is one of those horrible things. Actually, sometimes at home, hello, pup. Sometimes at home, if I ride out of the road, ride out of the yard, and 20 yards down the road, a bike's making a noise, I stop and go home and try and fix it up. I've got a long-term participant at Second Chance Cycles who just rides single speeds, and he's got a single speed, I am going to say, over 2 weeks, it has been completely impossible to isolate and eliminate a noise on his bike. I've changed wheels, changed chains, changed freewheels.
No worries.
Yeah, but it still makes a noise. Change bottom brackets, and usually sometimes these things actually sort themselves out in the end. But it's interesting that this has got about two or three of us just completely flummoxed. Pedals, I can't think of anything else. It's one of those crazy things. It's not keeping me awake at night, but I can tell by the frustration on Darren's face that if we just try and get it right. Anyway, noisy bikes. Nick, if you got a little bike moment to share with us, hang on a sec, I better put you on, give you a bit of microphone. There we go.
Yeah, well, I'm going to talk about one of the new bridges. It's been up for a couple of months, actually.
Yes.
Links okay. North Melbourne Station across to Moonee Ponds Creek.
Yes.
In the old days, we used to know how to get into E-Gate and go up the staff entry to North Melbourne Station and get in the, put our hand round and open the locked door and all that. And then they actually removed that and took it down. So it's been a long time coming, but we do a lot of bike and train to get to a nice spot to take the dogs and have a nice ride. Now I can get the train out of the city to North Melbourne, straight across that bridge, and I'm on the Moonee Ponds Creek. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just much needed.
And it hasn't had the publicity that the other ones have had a bit.
Well, it opened a while ago.
Yeah.
Certainly if you follow Bike West or Bike Melbourne on social media, you would know about it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't otherwise know it's there. Yeah. You could see it from the Moonee Ponds Creek path, but it's been a long time in the making as well.
Yeah. You can, well, that whole, and the whole re-landscaping of that area under there, I mean, there's a fair bit of work being done there.
Yeah, well, I think the state put, what was it, $4 billion into this project where the private operator gets to get all the revenue and gets rent-free land and et cetera. So you'd expect to see something good.
Yeah.
Reviews of the Valloway have been pretty good. Personally, I'm going to stay at ground level. Yeah, so that's a very welcome addition. And later on, we're going to talk about things that aren't being added.
Yeah.
A squeaky chair, can you fix that as well?
Well, you can always change chairs. If you've got two bikes and one makes a noise, you can jump off it and jump onto the other one, of course. Hey, any other news as far as Melbourne City Council? We should go through the news. We've got a bit here now.
Yeah. Okay. So, Queensbury Street bike lanes. When the Metro Tunnel project started, the big bike lane, which was unprotected, paint only, was turned into a car lane. Because Grattan Street was closed and Franklin Street was closed and the cars needed the space, of course, and it was more important than bikes. And the promise was that the bike lane would be restored. The City of Melbourne had it on their map for years as being protected bike lanes. And in May and June of last year, the plans were ready and we've done an FOI on emails. We're still waiting for the state, who have identified the documents like nearly 2 months ago, but are still umming and ahhing about which ones to let us see.
Hang on a sec. Can you just go back again? You cannot get the plans.
No, not the plans. Documents. So we've asked for all communications. So you'll understand why in a minute when I get there.
Okay, sorry.
The council has come through with their FOI, and basically it's all the emails they've sent to the state. There's been no replies from the state given to us by the council. We asked for it. And there's been nothing since June of last year, 2024. In one of the emails, the council said that they are working on getting approval from the state late 2024, but I think it was November, and starting construction in June of 2025. Well, as you can see, none of that's happened. There have been no emails from the state. They must have perhaps made a phone call to say, well, you know, we're just going to sit on it. What normally happens is that the plans go to the state and the state may come back with, you need to give the bus more room to turn, or we don't like this or that intersection or something like that. And it can go back and forth. Grattan Street went backwards and forwards for about 2 years in this process. That process hasn't even started. The state has not responded as far as the documents we've been given show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason is because they've built this Westgate boondoggle, you know, out of which we got a couple of bits of bike infrastructure. And they do traffic modelling. So traffic modelling is when they estimate what's going to happen. And they do traffic modelling before they put in a bike lane. But it's never right. So they don't want to take that car lane away from Queensbury Street until they see whether they need it for all the traffic that's being introduced off the Westgate boondoggle.
And they don't know that till it actually starts.
But no, and they won't know it until at least February because the traffic's light over the summer break. But they're not admitting to it. And the council's not giving any pushback, which leads on to the second topic. If you're not familiar with City Melbourne, very brief history, we had two partial terms during which we had a Lord Mayor who was in favour of building things for bikes. She never got a full term.
Yep.
One of the things that made her unpopular with her backers, and remember the City of Melbourne has a big business gerrymander?
Yep.
She was the business candidate, but then they decided they didn't like her, and it was at least partly because she built too many bike lanes. She's also too small a liberal for them. She was in favour of helping people and things like that, which the business doesn't like. But during that brief period, we got some bike lanes.
Yep.
So, you know, we got Grattan Street and William Street and Exhibition Street bike lanes and so on, which has been great. But there's a lot that's not being done. So the new council, which is her old deputy Lord Mayor, has taken over. And to get himself elected, to please the business lobby, he chose as his deputy Lord Mayor a very right-wing, one of the most right-wing Liberal Party operatives there is, who voted against her own team under the previous Lord Mayor again and again against every bike lane that was ever proposed. They had to do that to get elected. So what's his strategy? It's very clear. In the current year, they've budgeted a reduced amount of money. There was a big protest about the forward budget and they've supposedly restored it. But that's not the problem. They're spending all the money on rearranging the furniture of existing bike lanes. They are not building a single new inch. There actually is a couple of inches of new bike lanes, protected bike lanes, but there's nothing budgeted in the current year for any new bike lanes. Now, if you look at the council plan, which is the five-year forward plan of works, that used to say 5 kilometres of new protected bike lanes each year. That's sort of an average, and they budget for that. Now it says, the one that was released a month or so ago, says 5 kilometres of new or upgraded protected bike lanes. And what does upgraded mean? How do you upgrade an existing protected bike lane?
A fresh paint.
Well, these are protected bike lanes, they don't need paint.
Yeah.
But they're doing it this year, or they're supposed to be doing it. We haven't seen any action. They're taking away the quick, flexible, cheap curbing called Corba, and they're going to replace it with very expensive bluestone, which pleases the city designers but costs a lot of money and doesn't make any difference to bikes.
Well, it's just the infrastructure in the corners or the...
The whole lot, which is very expensive, all the way down Exhibition Street. So that's what they... Meanwhile, they've done nothing about the top end of Exhibition Street, which they're supposed to have fixed by now, now that the building site's finished and so on and so on. Now, so the strategy is, yeah, we're going to spend a whole lot of money, but we're never going to take a lane away from cars or even reduce parking. That's the goal. Meanwhile, the Lord Mayor says, oh, we're very in favour of bikes and we're going to spend, you know, the amount and we're going to do all these wonderful things for bikes. That is spin.
Yeah.
That is spin. Because he knows, he can say that because no one will take any, you know, the car heads don't take any notice. What they notice is when a lane disappears.
Yeah.
And then that gets them all fired up. So or that's the strategy.
Or a motorist lobby get on their case.
Well,
they don't need a motorist lobby. They've actually got the Melbourne, and they've actually got, as you said, the gerrymander in the city.
Well, it's what used to be the motorist lobby is the RACV, and they're actually very pro bike.
Yeah,
but you know, there's enough pushback, and that's the strategy: pretend, spend, and don't actually do anything.
No,
and that. So the state's inaction or refusal to cooperate on Queensbury Street plays very well into the council's agenda. And that's why there's no pushback from there. So that's the news from the city of Melbourne. Macaulay Road bike lanes, they're very overdue because the council moved the goalposts and said you have to plan to put in lots of trees. Queensbury Street will put in 60 new trees if we ever get to see it. So it had to be completely replanned. Hawke Street in North Melbourne, West Melbourne, is also held up, and that would be a very useful link for the same reason. And the problem is that there's underground services which make putting trees in difficult to impossible, and so there's no bike lane while they try and figure that out. Will we ever get a bike lane? Maybe not. But Macaulay Road, they keep telling us, is, you know, underway and under planning, but you can bet that that is subject to the same moratorium from the state, that they won't build it because of traffic coming off the Westgate Boondall.
Or they haven't got the data for how much traffic's actually going to come off.
They won't get the data until we actually see it.
Yeah.
And this is what's called induced traffic. In other words, you get more cars when you build more roads.
Yep. Yeah. What's it called again? Induced demand or something.
Induced traffic. Induced demand is right,
Happens in a lot of things. Hey, listen, we're just going to take a quick sponsor break, but we'll be back straight after this.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show here on 3CR. And just a little bit of a heads up to everybody out there, next year 3CR turns 50 years old. So very good. We'll look forward to those celebrations at that time of the year. Look, I'm just going to start with a little quote. I didn't want to be a bicycle maker. I became one. That's from Richard Sarks, who's a very high-profile American frame maker. which is my little entry or segue into, I do a little bit of a bike review, book review, not a bike review, but it is actually, on a wonderful book called The Handcraft Bicycles, Builders, Frame Design and Inspiration. Now, this comes from Christine Elliott and David Jablonka, two Melbourne people, and this comes as a follow-up to their first book, which was Custom Bicycles, A Passionate Pursuit, that was published in 2008, sorry, I might be wrong there. Now, to long-time listeners of the show, some of you would remember Christine and David coming into the show, coming into 3CR to spruik the wonderful book. I've got to say, that's the first time I met David and Christine. Since that meeting back then, a long time ago, David and I have worked together at Second Chance Cycles. David's just retired this year after 13 years there. So, just so you know that I've got a little bit of skin in the game, that I met David and Christine in the studio the first time the book came out, and then I've spent obviously a fair bit of time working with David. So I'm not sure how some people see coffee table books. Sometimes Nick, do you think of more photographs and very little writing as one of the common features of a coffee table book?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And I've been given a lot of bike books over the years, and I mean, even one of them was once called Bike Porn, and I could see why it was called that, because it was just actually very pretty colours, very nice bikes, nothing to do with how it was made or anything else that, and so that would fit into this. This new book differs from Christine and David's first book in that actually there's a lot more history about the frame makers, and they've included a lot more frame makers from over the years that actually is a nice way to highlight the evolution of bicycle design. From simplicity, I mean, I can think sometimes we're getting way too complex, but that's just me. So if I say to you that this book is lovely in that actually you actually hear from the frame makers, and it's interesting how the genesis story of a lot of them seems to be exactly the same, is at some stage in their lives they thought or knew they could make a better bike than the one they were riding. And this goes all the way back. I'm going to quote a couple of the bike builders here, just to give you an idea of how wide a stretch this is. So about 32 builders, and they range from the Moulton bike stands at the, anytime you see a small wheel bike on the road now, whether it's be a Brompton or a Birdie or any of those other things, their birthplace was the Moulton bike. Designed by the man who actually designed the suspension system for the Mini Minor. And so it goes from him, that design, which is still getting made, to a wonderful French bicycle builder called Alex Singer, who's been going well just after the Second World War, I think, especially that period in between the wars in Paris, to actually those ideas that came out of Paris then get translated into a Japanese frame builder, Grand Bois, who's named after a mountain in France where the cyclotourists used to gather in the 1930s.
Anyone rides mini velos all over Japan.
There we go. So, and it's interesting that this part of history then gets translated. And if you see the pictures of the Grand Bois bicycles, they are a homage to these beautiful bikes made pre-Second World War and just after the Second World War, especially the French designers. So we go from those and then actually to the Tomasinis, the Pigarettos, a couple of Melbourne cycle makers in there, Baum, Prover, who is just out at Heidelberg there. So we've got this lovely mix of the historic and a great story about the historic, all the way through to 3D printing of titanium dropouts. I mean, it's really quite fascinating. And obviously, all the way through it, the double triangle and that simple chain connection to the back of wheel just stays true the whole way through.
You know, my bullet cargo bike was the idea of a carpenter who got sick of having to drive to his jobs, and he thought of a better bike.
There we go. And that seems to be the hallmark of a lot of these, and they seem to be very passionate people.
Would you call that simple or complex, my bike? I reckon it's simple.
Yeah. Extend the wheelbase, put a wheelbarrow in the front. I mean, it's a pretty normal sort of cargo method carry, isn't it?
Yeah, you just split the steering into two bits, but it's the same.
So, look, if you're looking for a gift from that is more, much more than a coffee table book about colourful bikes, this is a great book that transcribes the history of, I'm going to say, high-quality bikes from their conceptions, whether it be the Moulton or the Alex Singers, to actually how they actually, their designs, their styles, their finish is still replicated in modern bicycles.
So the knowledge is not lost.
No, and it's actually, it's improved upon.
We keep building on it.
We keep building upon it. And sometimes we just go back to a simpler thing, which is good. And it's interesting looking at these 21st century builders, but still there's a hankering back to that simplicity, which is really quite fascinating. Now, Nick, I think that's about all we've got
time. That's a wrap.
Hey?
That's a wrap.
That's all we've got time for this week. I'll get you back on in the first week of January, and we can dissect, or you might have some of the FOIs.
Yeah, well, hopefully I'll have some more bad news for you.
Yes, which we thrive on here because there's a wonderful old, no, I'm not going to use, there's a wonderful old W.B. Yeats quote, being Irish, he had an abiding sense of tragedy, which sustained him through periods of temporary joy. And on that note, we will go out.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.